What's up, everybody, and welcome to Over the Top. From the highest of highs with my birthday on Sunday and Justin's birthday on Monday to the lowest of lows with my weekly Tottenham disappointment, this should be an interesting one. It's Magic 31. It's the Over the Top birthday edition. I'm Kyle. I've got my man Justin here. What's up, man?
Happy birthday, Kyle. Big, big upper 20s for us now. I remember when we were in our young 20s just tearing up the Starfire complex soccer fields there in our 22 and 23 year old days, and now I can't even like run 2 miles. So that's where we are.
Yeah. Off air before the episode, we should say we're talking about our body ailments, and Justin is like struggling to like get up with something with your back and chest. And I'm like, hey, I wake up with my back pain too. So we're getting old, man.
That's how we celebrate 27. Yeah. It's supposed to be the peak performance, right, of your athletic career is like mid to upper 20s, but no. I don't think
that's
so.
Right. Yeah, welcome to the prime. I'm on 28 now, so I'm getting near the end of my career.
End of your career, and maybe Jose is too, Kyle. I mean, we previewed it last episode, and I correctly predicted 3-1 to Manchester United. No Bruno Fernandes, but a lot of United quality, and they paid Tottenham back. The Spurs beat him 6-1 earlier in the season. United went to Spurs and won 3-1. Kyle, I feel like we have to start with United because that could get really ugly if we start with Spurs. So let's start with United. And really what stood out to me, Kyle, in watching this game is almost after the disallowed goal, but especially in the second half, United were the much better team in the second half.
Oh, absolutely. It was like they, you know, I don't think they were too poor in the first half. They weren't great by any stretch of the imagination. I thought Spurs were pretty decent. But it was literally like United went into that dressing room at halftime and flipped a switch in the second half. I mean, Pogba completely ran that game. He was running circles around everyone. And, you know, I was telling a United friend while we were watching the game, what really scares me is Cavani's movement in the box with the Spurs defense. And what do you know on that second goal? His off the ball movement is elite level. So you got to say United totally deserved this. They should also had a goal in the first half, which we'll talk about later. And you got to give them credit. If anything, United have character.
Yeah, speaking of that off the ball movement, it just shows. I mean, how old is Cavani? 30, 35?
32 now?
I'll look that up. But yeah, I mean, you don't need to be the fastest player, but if you just have a split second of acceleration in those like veteran moves, I mean, just look at Ibra. How old is Ibra? Like 39?
39, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look at him in Serie A. He doesn't score as many goals as he have. And
You're totally right, by the way. Cavani's not 32. He's 34 years old. So okay. Turned 34 in February. So, you know, freshly 34, but still, that's... he's getting up there. He's been up there in age.
But he's, you know, he's doing the business, Kyle. I mean, he hasn't been, I wouldn't say amazing for United this year and had some injuries, but when he's been called upon and healthy for them, I think he's their best striking option. I really do. Especially with Pogba in there, Fernandes can play behind. So yeah, United were dangerous. And then super sub, Mason Greenwood, Kyle, came onto the game. Ole made an attacking substitution, a like for like, taking out Rashford. But, you know, they have United are also playing midweek Europa League games. So there's an element to squad rotation there. But Greenwood came on, had the assist for the Cavani goal, and then scored on late. He's made a good impact for United as of late.
Yeah. And that was on top of a pretty tough sophomore year for Mason Greenwood. I mean, he had the first season where everyone was talking about him as like the next Van Persie. And, you know, I don't think that was a stretch of the imagination because watching him play, his finishing ability for a 17-year-old at the time was unbelievable. He's two-footed. He's got a lot more to his game than finishing, which we didn't quite see as much of last season. But, yeah, Mason Greenwood, really exciting prospect. And I feel like the Spurs defense marshaled Rashford pretty well when he was on the field. And then Greenwood came on, and it was not even close to the same. Not saying Greenwood's better than Rashford or anything like that, but just for the specific game, Greenwood was that man, and Spurs couldn't live with him.
And we talk about players all the time that are perceived as young, but they're actually surprised they're like 28. But Mason Greenwood, Kyle, isn't even 20 yet. So there's a lot left to go in terms of his development. For, you know, so for 19 and a half, I think he's doing just fine. So good on him. Kyle, let's get into this disallowed goal drama. So Cavani scored a goal in the first half that would have made it 1-0 to Manchester United. Was lovely movement and a lovely goal. But McTominay decided to barely graze Son. I don't think as any intention, just some natural arm movements, quote unquote natural maybe. And Son goes down in a heap. The referee stared right at it, did not award any contact foul or anything of the like. But VAR, in their trustiness that they are, said to go take a look at it after the goal. The referee went and took a look and disallowed the goal. Was this a clear and obvious error, Kyle?
Long story short, no. No. I mean, obviously, as a Spurs fan, I was thrilled to see that goal chalked off. But then I thought about it after, you know, it only took like a minute or two. And I was like thinking, wow, like the game has really gone if that is a foul and you rule out a perfectly good goal for that. I mean, yes, McTominay's finger does jab Son in the eye. I don't think Son was like, you know, people are making out, specifically Ollie, which we'll talk about later, making out to seem like Son was like faking it and writhing in pain. I don't, he did get poked in the eye, but like that is never in any way, shape, or form intentional. I mean, he's not even, McTominay's not even looking in his general direction, and I wouldn't even say he like raises an elbow dangerously. So I could not believe that goal was called off, and just pretty incredible. It's one of many highly questionable VAR calls this weekend, which I'm just so tired of it.
But Kyle, for this benefited Spurs because Son went and scored, I think, just minutes later off a bad, I thought a really bad defensive error from Lindelof, but a good touch, cross over to Son, scored the goal, 1-0 Tottenham going into the break. All things are easy breezy, but then United with the three goals. Okay. So after this game, Ollie and Jose, I don't even know where to start with this one.
Jesus.
Basically, Ollie had some bizarre comments to say about Son after the game. Man, I don't remember the exact quotes, but basically, he wouldn't give Son food after the game if he needed 10 mates to help him up like Son did after that little incidental contact. Am I summarizing that effectively?
Yeah, but he also did this play on words trying to be clever, saying like my son, like literally talking about his son, like if he did what Son did, are you confused yet? Then he wouldn't get food for dinner or some really weird shit. I thought it was bizarre.
But Jose Mourinho, in all his wisdom, of course, needed to bring that up in his post-game conference. So he was being asked questions, six of questions go by or something, and then he brings it up. It's like, I don't know how you haven't asked me about this. This is crazy. And then he's like, Sonny is very lucky. His father is a better person than Ole, which is big oof, big shade thrown on Ole. And he also made this great reference about this Portuguese saying how bread is bread and cheese is cheese and all this stuff. And it was just like, it was a classic Jose moment, Kyle.
Can you say deflection, deflection, deflection? I mean, to be fair, Ollie gave him like the perfect deflection on a golden platter. So the discussion wouldn't be how much Spurs are failing or how much of a disappointment the season's been with, you know, you have one of the greatest managers ever with like the best Spurs squad I've seen in 15 years at least. And, you know, sure they're in a final, but they look miles away from top four, probably won't beat City in a final. So, but that's not the narrative. People are talking about this bizarre, you know, Ollie and Jose shade throwing competition, and Ollie's son got in on the action today. It's just, it's a really weird side story, but the facts are the facts. Which is Spurs now sit in seventh place, 49 points. They've lost 18 points from winning positions, which is second only behind Brighton in the league. It's not good. They're behind Liverpool, who have had a dreadful season and have lost so many players to injury. They're behind Chelsea, who sacked their manager. West Ham, and yes, David Moyes, Leicester again, and Everton are only 1 point behind them with the game in hand. So it's just, I don't know, man. I mean, the season's not over. They're 6 points behind fourth place, but I don't know. I don't have faith that they're going to, you know, win out or anything like that. And something tells me that you don't feel that either.
They're not, it's not impossible, but it's just a lot of teams to leapfrog. You need Leicester to collapse, which is, I'm certainly not, you know, counting that out because we've seen it before and we haven't seen them in good form lately. West Ham is in good form. They need to collapse. And then they have to leapfrog Chelsea and Liverpool, who, I mean, I would bet on Chelsea and Liverpool over Tottenham right now. So it's tough. It's really tough to see. And yeah, Everton could jump them. Aston Villa could get close. Arsenal's four points behind.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, Leeds United are also, I think, 4 points behind. Tied with Arsenal.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. Tottenham, basically, they need a miracle. They absolutely have to beat Everton and then take advantage of their favorable schedule. I think it's a pretty easy run until they play Leicester on the last day of the season. But this game just really showed two teams going in different directions, and it showed why they are where they are. I mean, United showed up in the second half and did what they have to do. Tottenham tied 1-1 in 60 minutes, decided to take off Lo Celso and bring on Sissoko to close out a draw. I don't know what the hell Jose's talking about. So, you know, you got to give Ollie credit, and we'll talk about him a little bit later. And Jose, it's not looking promising.
Let's move to another match this weekend. West Ham beat Leicester City 3-2. And we'd be remiss, Kyle, if we didn't talk about friend of the podcast, Jesse Lingard, right off the bat. I mean, this is a revelation. I mean, who would have seen this coming? I mean, I know you bet on, we had the little 5-goal bet, and you bet he'd score 5 or more, and I took the under. But none of us expected this. I mean, 8 goals with 7 games left. Is the most goals of any player in the Premier League since his transfer. I mean, it just shows you what confidence can do for a player, Kyle. I mean, this is crazy.
Yeah, it just goes to show this game is much, much more than pure talent, pure ability, or flair skills. I mean, so much of it has to do with confidence. I mean, you compare a player like Lingard with like Dele Alli, you know, pretty similar like player profile, I guess you could say, had pretty similar career trajectories. But they're going in different directions largely just because of confidence. So it's really, really fascinating. And it's looking like, I mean, he scored 8 goals already. It's looking like he could score 10 goals.
Oh, yeah.
This is the perfect system for him to play in. I mean, West Ham set up in this really kind of defensive shape with 5 at the back, but then they have their target man up top. And then behind them, they have Lingard and whether it's like Bowen or Fornals, they just have total freedom. And that perfectly suits Lingard's game. But I just real quick want to say, as impressive as Lingard has been, I was clearly reminded why he is the Jay Lings that I loved to hate in the past with a really cringe celebration after that first goal. You know,
really
doing
bad.
It's just bad. I don't know. Whenever he pulls out the dance moves, I'm like, dude, no, you were really doing something for me. But look, West Ham, they're really playing to the strengths.
Absolutely. I mean, David Moyes, I mean, in his post-game conference, press conferences, he's always playing down the fact that West Ham are in fourth or in Champions League. He's like, look, I don't see us. It's like, yeah, we'll try, but like, we have no expectation to finish in top four.
Oh, yeah, because, right.
You know, under promise, over deliver, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure for him, he's like, Europa League is a big success for West Ham, which it is. I mean, considering the last season that they had where they were in the relegation scrap most of the season. So big accomplishment for West Ham, and without Declan Rice this game as well, which kind of showed, because just like last week and the week before, they had 3-0 win, their 3-0 leads again, like they did against Wolves and like they did against Arsenal. And they made it nervy in the second half. Leicester were starting to play more aggressive, more attacking. Iheanacho with 2 more goals in this game. He's been, talk about a guy on form lately.
Yeah. No kidding.
Christ, I mean, he's become a must-start for Leicester.
Well, his finishing is great.
Yeah, so they gave up two goals at the end, West Ham did, but held on. So massive result for West Ham. And then massive result for Leicester. I mean, think if they won this game, they would have put really good distance between them and fourth place. But now it's 1 point, Kyle.
Absolutely.
They've looked really nervy lately. I mean, their defense has been really struggling, which is surprising, given a Brendan Rodgers system. Their attack's been okay, but they haven't been out playing teams like they were in the middle of the season.
No, yeah, and it's kind of strange because I feel like their midfield isn't quite dominating teams like we know Tielemans and Madison, who didn't play in this game, and Perez and Didi can. But yeah, they've really, again, hitting a bad patch of form. A lot of that can, at least in this match, be put down to Leicester players attending a party recently. I think it's James Madison, Eozy Perez, Chowdhury, Wes Morgan,
their captain.
Yeah. Oof. And Harvey Barnes, who's, I think,
he's injured anyway. But
yeah, they all broke COVID protocols. And Brendan Rodgers, I mean, both to his credit, but also like, damn, dude, what are you doing? Decided to bench all of them. None of them played, mm-hmm. which is really ballsy. And his explanation was that, you know, footballers make so much money nowadays that a fine means nothing, which... he's right, and to his credit, but damn, is that the right decision? I mean, that's a huge, huge call in a game like this.
I mean, I don't have a problem with him, what he did, because, I mean, if he's at this club, you got to set a precedent and make the players respect you and respect the rules and the larger world of what's going on, you know, with the COVID situation. But at the end of the day, like, you're disappointing your fans, the rest of your teammates that did follow protocols, and just your expectations as a manager, like, going and just not starting. I mean, Madison, clearly one of your best players. I mean, me specifically have given so much love to James Madison as a player. Jose Perez has had a big impact in games. So,
yep. At the same time, it's a pretty dumb decision by Madison because, like, idiotic. As crazy as it sounds, Madison's place at the Euros is at risk.
Oh, totally.
Because Lingard is on fire. Mason Mount is on fire.
Grealish.
You have Jack Grealish coming back from injury. I mean, he could very well miss out on the Euros, which is crazy because I know you and I are both big fans of James Madison.
I mean, Jesse Lingard's making a case. I get it.
Yep. I mean, Mason Mount, too. I mean, how could you leave him out? As much as we've dogged on both of those players in the past.
I mean, Mason Mount's form is impeccable right now.
They've got to be in there. But look, Leicester's defense has been really concerning. They're letting games slip. They're not dominating, as you've said. And I'm not sure how you're feeling, but I think they're really vulnerable. And it's not good for that top four spot.
They need to win at least three of their next four games if they have even a shot. And they have West Brom, Crystal Palace, Southampton, and Newcastle. If they don't win three of those four, I think they're toast because their last three are United, Chelsea, and Tottenham. The reason if United locks up second before then they could face a weakened United team because United could be well into the Europa League and resting players. But
yeah,
that you don't want to count on that. So I think, Kyle, minimum they have to win three of next four.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you're right. I think United may also be in the FA Cup. I could be wrong about that, but
no, they were knocked out by Leicester. Leicester's in the FA Cup this weekend against Southampton.
Which could be kind of a, I don't know. Yeah, it's looking a little nervy over there in for the Foxes.
But they sit in third. So I mean, we say all that, but they're still in third and they control their destiny, right?
Season. They've been a good season.
They control their destiny. They're going to play Chelsea. They're going to play United. Like, you know what? Like, win one of those games and they could be okay.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle, let's move on to rapid fire. Friday's game saw Wolves beat Fulham 1-0 at the death, Kyle. Fulham, this was a brutal, brutal result that most people were saying this is a must win for them given the table position. And they lost the game by an Adama Traore goal. I think that's the first goal in 92 years for him, but got the goal with a smashed rocket into the right corner. top right corner, which I thought Alfonso Areola should have done better. I mean, that's the near post from a kind of a crazy angle. But yeah, good for Traore getting an assist last game and a goal this game to start his season off. Wolves, I mean, they haven't been great this year, but Fulham, that's the main story in this game, Kyle. I mean, they go 32 games now where most teams have played 31 and they're 6 points behind.
Yeah, it's not looking great. I mean, Fulham, after looking like one of the form teams from, what, January to, you know, mid to early March.
Early March, yeah.
Suddenly have picked the worst possible time to hit a really bad patch of form, because who would have thought that both West Brom and Newcastle would go on a pretty decent run of form? So, yeah, as you said, 6 points behind Newcastle. I think that's six games left for them. Mm-hmm. They don't score a lot of goals. They're starting to leak goals. It's really running out of time for Scott Parker, which is a shame, because they're finally, seemed like they were finally kicking into gear. So, only other thing that I'll very, very briefly talk about, because I don't want to talk about it. We got to talk about VAR. Oh man, God. This was one of the more okay and understandable moments of the weekend, but how Daniel Podence is offside for Willian Jose's disallowed goal would have been his first goal for the club. No bueno. Again, it's just dead even, and how these even game calls keep on getting ruled back is just, it's infuriating, man.
It's against the spirit of the rule, really. I mean, if it's even, like, tie goes to the attacker, really, is how the rule should go. And by the human eye, like, that looks onside.
Yeah, I mean, look how baseball does it. I mean, if you can't tell, you know, tie goes to the runner. And I don't know where that got lost in all of this with VAR.
And the crazy thing is we can't tell, and we'll say this almost every episode, we don't have the technology to tell the exact millisecond that the ball left the player's foot.
Yeah, and we also don't have the technology to have the exact concrete lines of who is where. I mean, I forget if this
They can't draw lines, apparently. We'll get to that game. That was the game, West Brom game. Yeah.
But even on this one, like, this was one of the more okay calls, but I feel like I remember seeing the line drawn, like, not right on the shoulder or armpit, but, like, a little bit further down Podence's arm, and I was like, what the heck? Like, can't how is...
That. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Crazy result. Leeds United, Kyle, they took down Man City 2-1. Surprising from a couple aspects. One, Leeds United had 10 men for half of this game with a 46-minute red card. And two, if you look at the stats, Leeds United had two shots, both by Stuart Dallas, and two goals. I mean, 100% shot-to-goal ratio is pretty incredible.
Yep.
Manchester City had 29 shots with one goal. So, I mean, hey, that's football sometimes.
Yeah, this game was super nutty. I mean, this was what, City's first loss since Manchester United? What was that, March 7th?
Early March, yeah.
You know, Pep Guardiola going up against his coaching idol, basically. Yes, he never played under Marcelo Bielsa, but word is, after he was retired and was getting his coaching badges, he specifically went to Argentina to pick Bielsa's brain. And lo and behold, Bielsa, super attacking manager, almost suicidal, decides to really, well, he didn't have an option, but his team really sat back and soaked up pressure. It was pretty incredible. I think after the game, he's like, maybe I should start practicing defense, which I thought was pretty funny. His teams are like suicidal. But yeah, look, Stuart Dallas, that first goal was quality, man. It really was. And Leeds really showed up in this game, and it just was one of those really bizarre matches, and it's kind of why we love football. I mean, it just happens sometimes.
And it's funny because City kind of started, you hate to say this because they have so many quality players that play on their first team as well, but it was kind of like an A/B squad for City. No Kyle Walker, no Ruben Diaz, no Laporte, no Gundogan, no Kevin De Bruyne, no Riyad Mahrez, no Phil Foden. I mean, a couple of those players came on as substitutes, but I mean, a lot of like players right now missing out.
Yeah, a lot of defenders, which basically tells me they're trying to rest them for your boy, Erling Haaland.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I mean, you saw Haaland absolutely boss Diaz a couple times in that game, so I think that's probably pretty smart. I mean, Haaland's going to leave this summer for 170 million to City or to one of the teams in Spain, likely. So,
dude, we'll see if any team can spend the Haaland or Kane or Lukaku money. I mean, enter your top line striker here and name any price. I don't know. We'll see. But talking of big money signings. Havertz over at Chelsea 4-1 over Crystal Palace. Kai Havertz has really struggled all season after his big money move. What was it, like £80 million from Leverkusen? People have been saying he's done, he's not going to cut it in the Premier League. We finally saw a little bit of what he's about in this game. I thought Kai Havertz was on one. He played as a false nine, and his movement and intelligence in the box was fantastic. And this is coming from, you know, I have not watched admittedly much of Kai Havertz, but that I believe is his goal, you know, his intelligence and know-how to create space within the box before curling in far post was just brilliant. So as a neutral, even though I, you know, don't like Chelsea clearly, I've really enjoyed watching Kai Havertz on this game.
Yeah, I mean, he was great. And that's, you know, that's what we were saying in the beginning of the season, too, when he was starting out wide under Lampard. And that just didn't make any sense. That wasn't his position. That's not where he thrives. He thrives as an attacking midfielder or false nine role, which he played at Leverkusen and did so well at. So he's playing to his strengths. He can play as the false nine, drop in, have Pulisic and Mount in this case run through. And they played that same front three in the Champions League game today against Porto, which, you know, turned out well, but didn't turn out well at the same time. So, I mean, Pulisic was fouled a record like 11, or not a record, but like 11 times, which is the most since Messi 10 years ago. So yeah, it's just, you know, I think that front three works well together. It's pacey, it's young, creative, and Pulisic getting two goals. I mean, you have to say, there's not a better American out there, right?
No, he's still, I was actually in my group chat with my everyone I grew up playing soccer with. I asked, like, is Pulisic still the top American prospect? And everyone still unanimously said yes. I mean, Serginho Dest is great, McKinney's great, but Pulisic is still the golden boy. Three goals in two games since he came back from injury. That first goal, and we posted his goals on our Instagram page at Over the Top EPL, quick plug. That first goal he scored was a great touch because Havertz really blasted that ball into him and he perfectly set it up, killed the ball, and then just blasted it near post in the top of the net with his left foot. Just an absolute rocket. So Pulisic, the more and more he plays, the more I'm thinking, like, I'm not comparing him to this player, but his style of play reminds me of Hazard a little bit. Not just because he's playing for Chelsea, but he's just so quick and pacey and agile and just is gets fouled so much. So I'm just hoping he can battle his injury problems because it's looking really promising. And I'm hoping to see more Pulisic in a Chelsea jersey.
Hazard has a little bit beefier legs than Pulisic, though. He's a little, some couple tree trunks down there. But yeah, I get what you're saying. Liverpool, Kyle, won their first game at Anfield in a long time. I mean, they'd lost six straight there, which is crazy because they had how long? I think like, they lost six straight at Anfield. How crazy is that? Like, just
it's like I think it was like 2 years without a loss at home or something like that.
And then they lost six. Oh man, just tells you the state of their cluster injuries. But they won 2-1 against Aston Villa. Fight back win because they went down 1-0 to an Ollie Watkins goal. Thank you for my fantasy team. But Trent Alexander-Arnold, Kyle, trying to prove his worth at the Euros, saying like, hey, you know, I might not be best defensively, but look what I can do in the crossing and the finishing space, which, Kyle, I mean, he has to be one of the best finishing right backs in the world.
Oh, has to be. And I would say he's the best crossing right back in the world on top of that. Yeah, look, he's done really well, at least in the EPL, to really show what he's about and prove Gareth Southgate wrong. I think Southgate was at this game too, so good on him. I mean, his finish from outside the box, I think he was on the left side and finished left it far post. Great finish. Look, yeah, you're right. Trent was pretty exposed in this game, to be honest. He wasn't fantastic defensively, but you got to bring him on the plane to the Euros. Real quick. Just real quick, VAR in this game, again, I mean, This was again one of those really even decisions. It's just infuriating and boring. And I hate to tell you this, like, I'm actually getting all these different VAR calls mixed up. I wrote them down in my notes, and I'm like, fuck, what was this VAR call even like? I'm like kind of forgetting, but there are just so many, and that is a problem. It really is a problem. And I think it was Jota was called offsides for Firmino's disallowed goal. Okay, it's coming back to me. But that's just, again, nonsense, man. Nonsense.
I couldn't tell the difference in this one. I don't know.
And even then, we've talked about three VAR calls. These were not the worst. It's coming.
Salah was good in this game, though. I was about to transition, but I forgot to mention that. Salah, I mean, he's battling Harry Kane for the Golden Boot, and I thought he was pretty solid in this game.
Yeah, so what? They're both, are they tied now?
Tied at 19.
Who's your Golden Boot pick? Who do you think is going to win?
Harry Kane.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely in it, though.
Yeah. Yeah, and you think people say he's had a bad season and he's going to score 20 goals. Like, what?
Who says he's had a bad season?
The pundits, some say it's like he's disappointing. He's, you know, he's underwhelming against expectations. Let's throw that Sadio Mane's way. Like, what are we doing?
Oh, man, month? Can you just, like, the difference in narratives, I know this is my Tottenham bias, but the difference in narratives is just outrageous. He's the top goal scorer, top assist maker. Look, Spurs have not been good, but come on, Kane hasn't a bad season. But speaking of bad seasons, Newcastle, yikes, it's been really bad up in Tyneside. Good result this time, though. They beat Burnley away 2-1. Just real quick, Alan Saint-Maximin is just too good for Newcastle. I'm sorry, Newcastle fans, but came on as a second half substitute. And within 10 minutes, he had an assist and a goal. His goal basically taking it from halfway, rifling it far post. I think he could go for like 35, 40 million and
easy.
Get some good money for him. He's a fantastic player. But they now have 6 points ahead of Fulham with the game in hand. Some of their best players coming back from injury, like Callum Wilson and Saint-Maximin in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And they play Fulham last game of the season. So could be for all the marbles.
Could be. I think they have a tough run in. I'm going to look at their schedule real quick. But I mean, yeah, ASM way too good for this team. Burnley, I mean, Chris Wood is a solid poacher, Kyle. I mean, he turned into provider this game, but I mean, without Chris Wood, I mean, Burnley might be toast, right?
You'd have like 5 goals all season or something crazy.
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, how many points they have given their goal scoring production, although they've been better as of late, but through March, I think it was pretty terrible. So they have West Ham, Liverpool, Arsenal, Leicester, Man City, and there's their next five. That's pretty bad as a Newcastle fan. Like, you don't like to hear that. Last two against Sheffield and Fulham. That Sheffield, they could secure it, that right there.
Yep. Yeah, speak of the devil, by the way, Sheffield. I mean, it's really, there's no point in really talking about them because they're already toast. I'm actually surprised they're not mathematically relegated already.
I know.
Feels like they were long ago, but they lost to Arsenal 3-0. Arsenal didn't even have to get out of first gear for this one. Was just so, so easy. you and I were talking off air. We're pretty sure an MLS club could beat Sheffield. I mean, they're just terrible in possession. They don't defend well anymore, and they can't score any goals at all. I mean, every single player on their squad is a championship level player at best. For Arsenal, though, Alexander Lacazette, you know, you've been saying all season he needs to start. I tend to agree with you. Not really sure what's been going on there, but I think he's actually been quite good this season.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, what does he have, like 13 goals as an Arsenal player this year? And I just don't know how you don't start. I mean, his goals per 90 is by far the best on the team, and especially with Aubameyang struggling this season. So I think he's a must start. I think it's hilarious that Xhaka started at left back, but I mean, it's against Sheffield, so you could probably throw in the mascot in there and be fine. So it's just Sheffield. Goodbye. Like, good riddance. If Newcastle draw or win or draw and Sheffield lose, they're mathematically eliminated next weekend.
Yeah. I mean, thank God. Sheffield, please, goodbye. Blast them into outer space. And
I want to blast them along with the Brighton-Everton game, Kyle.
Oh, man, you beat me to it. You really did. I mean, let's not say anything more than, like, let's literally blast that out to Mars, because this game, I can't believe you were telling me you watched a little bit of this game.
I just had it on in the background for a little bit, and then I turned it off, and, you know, it was, okay, it was, like, too bad for background. Like, it was just too boring for my background noise. Just think how boring that has to be.
Yes.
Brighton looked like the better team, but how many times have we said that? Okay, that's the one thing I said about this game. West Brom, Kyle. What the hell? Barcode FC.
Man. You know, there have been some weird scorelines all season. This is also up there, along with the result last weekend. They beat Southampton 3-0 after beating Chelsea 5-2. So West Brom, after scoring, what was it, 28 goals all season, have scored 8 goals in their last 2 games. I think we crunched the numbers, and that's almost a third of their goals all season, which...
Yeah,
where
yeah,
is so
8 of their
from?
28 in the last 2 games, which is just crazy. Yeah, I don't know. Like, Southampton looked really bad this game. Although the XG story says that it was close to an even game, but that's because of Southampton's penalty miss, likely. But Danny Ings looked bad. Southampton just looked bad. It's just miles away from what they were earlier this season. But, you know, their early season was just so good that it's made them safe, likely. But West Brom, I mean, they're on 24 points now after 2 unlikely wins. If they win next game, which, I mean, crazy. No way they win next game. But they would leapfrog Fulham with the same amount of games played. There's just no possible way, right? There's just no way, right?
Could they? Could Big Sam pull a Big Sam? I mean, the team that's pulled the greatest escape in my lifetime was West Brom, and I think that was in like 2005 or 2006 when they were like dead last at Christmas. So yeah, could they do it again? I mean,
that's the biggest, and then probably Leicester's the year before they won the title, right? That was a big escape too.
That's true. How upset will you be if you have to see West Brom's barcode jerseys again next season?
God, they better come with a full redesign, right? Like, just like 3-5 stripes, whatever it is, like the classic looking kit. And I want none of that green yellow, red yellow combination ever again.
Hell no, no more vomit colors. Real quick. We've been talking about the worst VAR call. I don't want to spend too long on this because we're running out of time here, but my God, this was the VAR call from hell that we were all telling you about earlier in the pod. They literally drew the line on the wrong player, and it like baffles me that these referees make so much money with... I feel like if they didn't have VAR technology, this goal would not have been called back. I mean, it was absurd. They literally drew the line on... What was it, Kyle Bartley or something instead of Diagne, who scored? Just outrageous. Maybe we'll get a picture up on the Instagram or something, but it was just, I mean,
it didn't affect the result, thank God, but like it was awful.
I mean, West Brom's jerseys already make me want to barf, but this call just like I actually did vomit a little bit in my mouth. So, my God, the game's going. It's going.
All right, Kyle, that's the end of Rapid Fire. Before we depart for the evening, Couple thoughts that we have to. We need to expand on this Ole Jose talk, but let's talk about Ole for a second. I mean, we had teased in our Instagram post at Over the Top EPL that we were going to discuss Ole and our prediction, well, mainly yours, that he was going to be out by Christmas. It is April, what is it? April 13th as of today, and he has Manchester United sitting in a comfortable second place. So, I mean, I don't know how we're not eating our words.
I mean, I am. I am eating my words. It's.
I mean, I don't want to throw you under the bus. I had big doubts on Ole, too. I mean, I just didn't think he was, like, a good coach or smart at all. But yep, clearly he's doing something right, or has smart people around him.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I'll like circle back to how I still feel about Ollie to this day, but at least on my personal level, where I will give him credit is he clearly played under Sir Alex Ferguson, and he clearly was involved in those dressing rooms, because how many times have we seen this season United come out in the first half and look completely lost with like no tactics, just look completely flat, go in at halftime and they show up in the second half with energy, they press as a team. They create some great attacking opportunities. They have good movement off the ball. I mean, they have good players, let's be honest. But the fact that they flip a switch in the second half and then do it regularly, I mean, they've probably overcome the most deficits in the league, I would just venture to say,
because
it definitely seems like that by a long shot. Whatever Ollie's saying at halftime or in training or whatever, this team has character, and they don't fall back. They don't fall down easily. So I will give them credit for that. But personally, I still think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is exactly what is holding back Manchester United right now. I still do. I think with this talent on this team and the resources United has, they should still be better than they are right now. I mean, I think they've overachieved this season, but that's given the situation with Ollie. I still think he's tactically inept. I mean, too many times a season, they just look like completely lost or don't know what they're doing. But to his credit, I mean, energy and character, if anything, is what he's brought to this team. So good on him. But still, come on. If there's a good manager out there, Manchester United should take that opportunity, in my opinion.
Jose Mourinho, on the other hand, Kyle. We said they needed to invest in his players last summer, which you could say they did.
I would say they did.
Spurs sit in seventh place, as we mentioned earlier. They're defensively inept, is what I'm going to say. And I'm going to say that that's probably the nicest way to say it.
Yeah, you're being kind.
That's Jose Ball starting from the back and having solid defense. They don't have that. They don't play offensive style, so that means they're not playing to the players that they have, and Gareth Bale, Harry Kane, Son, Lucas, Lo Celso, you name the players. What do you do if you're this summer? Daniel Levy has a decision to make. Let's say, in all likelihood, Spurs do not make Champions League. What do you do?
Yeah, I'm going to also say the... Let's just say Spurs also don't win the Carabao. I know for most clubs that wouldn't matter, but for Spurs fans, let's be honest, it would matter. It's the one trophy I've ever seen Spurs win. Believe it or not, I have seen Spurs win a trophy. So,
and Swansea have won it more recently.
So shove it. I have seen a trophy in my lifetime once, and it was the Tinkerbell Cup. oh, man. Daniel Levy, what do you do? Well, there... It's weird because I really try to not be on the reactive side. I wasn't crazy at all. Actually, I wasn't. I was actually really angry. I was really angry when they sacked Pochettino and then went on to hire probably my least favorite manager on earth. But I was willing to sacrifice the style if it brought success. But it's like we have completely fast-forwarded through all the successful parts at Tottenham and have just plopped into the last treacherous third of the Jose Mourinho reign. I mean, it's not toxic yet, but come on, man. This season's been a complete failure. He's now looking for excuses. His players don't look like they know what to do on his system. I mean, I've never seen a team both sit back but also just look completely vulnerable at the same time. It's kind of incredible. I don't know. If they don't win top four and don't win a trophy after how much they invested this season, I don't know, man. For me, it probably depends on how they finish the season. I would even be willing to give him a second season or another season if it at least looks like it's going somewhere and they don't finish top four or win a Carabao. What Daniel Levy will do, let me tell you right now, I actually don't think he'll have the balls to sack him, period. Say they finish the season terribly. He invested so much in Jose that I think Levy's going to keep him on and give him one more year, which I'm starting to get worried whether Jose is the right person to rebuild this club because it's looking like that's what's needed.
Well, it's scary because I don't know if Jose's good with young players either. Like we've seen in his recent stints, he tends to rely on veterans and whatnot, but I don't know.
I would say a little less so than before. I mean, he did bring up Rashford and McTominay, you know, but like we're like scraping the barrel for one or two examples, right? to your point, and I think there are like one or two examples on Tottenham, like Tanganga, but I don't think he's been fantastic or anything. But
no,
you're right. Yeah. You're right.
I don't know. I mean, I guess, I mean, here's what I would do, and then I'll say Daniel Levy. I would go to Harry Kane and I would say, what is it going to take for you to stay? And is it Jose Mourinho or is it Jose Mourinho? Or is it someone else? And whatever Harry Kane says, I'm going to do, because at the end of the day, if you don't have Harry Kane on that team, as we've seen before, the squad takes a nosedive. I've never seen Son look more miserable than I've seen recently. And that could be because of Twitter abuse, which is horrific and awful, especially after last week's game. But like, he's just in the post-game press conferences looks so down, and that's like a really cheerful, fun player. So like, I don't know what you need. And probably, in the realistic sense, it probably depends who's available this summer. Would Brendan Rodgers be willing to leave Leicester? Would Nagelsmann out of Leipzig be willing to leave? If so, those might be options. If both are staying, then you might not be able to find a suitable replacement and then have to invest in Jose. So that's probably the more realistic answer. But my answer is go to Harry Kane and do what he wants.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, you brought up the two managers that I want at Spurs. That, like, not just because they're mentioned in the papers, but it would make sense with the profile of Spurs. Look, Spurs have always hired managers that are, one, attacking, always. Always, always, always. In my entire lifetime, always an attacking manager to a fault almost. And a project manager, one who builds a project. And Jose is neither of those. And Nagelsmann and Rodgers are both of those. And Rodgers this season has shown he can also set his team up to defend and be counterattacking. So,
you know what would be interesting, Kyle? It's Spurs. I don't think it's going to happen. But if Spurs paid the bucks and got Antonio Conte. It's rumored turmoil Inter. Inter's going to win the Serie A.
That's really
interesting. He's going to win at Inter, he's going to win at Chelsea, and he's going to win at Juventus. I mean, Juventus not a great feat, but I mean, Inter and Chelsea were great.
Yeah, for sure. Even with Juve having a down year, you're totally, totally right. And winning with Chelsea and changing into that five back, that, you know, I give him credit for that. But I don't think it would work, and here's why. Antonio Conte, very much like Jose Mourinho, I'm surprised Jose hasn't done more of this. He always demands money, 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 money at every club. He's like, spend this crazy amount of money on this player. He's always wanting, pushing the board to spend more. I cannot imagine how that would work with Daniel Levy, the stingiest owner in all of football. This is an owner of a team who was just named the 10th wealthiest club in the world. And just came out with news 2 days ago that we have to sell before we can buy. Are you kidding me, dude? Are you kidding?
Oh, no, but Conte has the recent domestic success that Jose Mourinho does not.
And I get the sense that Conte could actually coach his team to play the way he wants, clearly better than Jose, because when I watch Spurs play, I don't know what I'm looking at or what the goal is or what the tactics are. First 10 games of the season, I would say I totally saw what Jose was trying to do. Everyone seemed to know their role, but now it's like, I don't know what the hell is going on. So
yeah, I mean, people, it's a distant memory now, but Spurs started very well this season.
They were in first place for a month. Like, how long ago does that feel?
And United were in the dumps.
Yeah, Man City was like in 15th at one point.
Oh, man. Remember when everyone wrote them off? That was good times. Us at the podcast, we actually, this is not sarcasm, we never did that. Like, we always thought that was really stupid.
Never. And I think we both never really expected Spurs to challenge for the title.
No, but we didn't expect them to be this bad, for sure.
Nope.
That's for sure. Well, Kyle, that's it for this episode. Out there, make sure you subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Well, Kyle's updated the social media a little more frequently. I'll try to get on it as well. So follow us at Twitter and Instagram at OverTheTopEPL. Let's watch Dortmund, Manchester City tomorrow. Hopefully Dortmund can pull off the miracle. But until next time, we'll see you later.